The role of video-assisted thoracoscopic surgery, or VATS, in lung cancer staging, presented by Andrew Pierre, Associate Professor at the University of Toronto Faculty of Medicine, Division of Thoracic Surgery, Department of Surgery. Dr. Pierre spoke at the 2015 Toronto Thoracic Refresher, sponsored by the University of Toronto Faculty of Medicine. Dr. Pierre?
I think perhaps the role of VATS in the staging of lung cancer has changed considerably over the last 10 years with the introduction of all the new technology that you've heard about, but there continues to be a limited role for it in particular cases. You're well aware of the basic staging modalities for lung cancer, CT of the chest and upper abdomen, brain imaging, PET CT, and invasive mediastinal staging, including EBUS and mediastinoscopy. But when all of those tests have been done, there won't be many indications for VATS, but a few will still exist. This is a brief overview, and I'll talk in more detail about some of these. First, the contralateral lung nodule may be suspicious. Do you consider that a new primary? Will it affect your treatment if it's also malignant? So in certain highly selected cases, you may choose to remove that nodule to confirm exactly what the diagnosis is and whether or not it's a different histology or benign or malignant, if a needle biopsy can't sort that problem out for you clinically. I'll talk briefly later about mediastinal stations 5 and 6. About pleural effusions and pleural nodules that may require diagnostic confirmation. Determining invasion of intrathoracic structures can be done by VATS and may be important in directing management. And finally, a few words about restaging after induction therapy, similar to what Schaff and Kasha have talked about earlier. VATS is a fairly commonplace technique in thoracic surgery now. Usually it's performed under general anesthesia with single lung ventilation in order to give you a nice clear picture of the chest. But it can be performed in awake patients with conscious sedation breathing spontaneously. And Kazu's initiated this program of awake VATS pleuroscopy performed in our endoscopy unit in this specially designed interventional thoracic surgery suite, which is equipped as you would any standard operating room. And for these awake pleuroscopies, we have an anesthetist who will monitor the patient and administer the conscious sedation. And most of these patients will go home the same day as the procedure, unless they have a talc pleuridesis performed and need chest tube drainage for a couple days. So the first situation I want to talk about now is the station 5 and 6 lymph nodes. They're not reachable by a standard cervical mediastinoscopy. Dr. Ginsberg described what's called the extended mediastinoscopy through the neck, where you approach it between the innominate vein and the innominate artery and carefully work your way down to station 5 and 6. I did 2 of those procedures as a resident. I haven't done any as a staff man. I don't know if anyone in the room has done one in the last 10 years. I see a lot of shaking heads. That really hasn't had any significant uptake. What is more common is the Chamberlain procedure, which is a mediastinotomy in the left anterior chest over the second intercostal space, I think originally described with a resection of the cartilage there, and then inserting the scope or looking directly down into the para-aortic position to biopsy station 6 and station 5. Again, as a resident, I did about 3 of these. We didn't resect the cartilage. We simply went in the intercostal space and placed the mediastinoscope. As a staff man, I haven't done any. Really, I've transitioned to sampling these stations by VATS. I feel that it's perhaps less morbid procedure. I think there's less risk of vascular injury. Mainly it's the internal mammary artery that's at risk when you perform this procedure. And I can more accurately see exactly where I am, where the vagus phrenic nerve is, recurrent laryngeal nerve, and I feel I can do a safer procedure. But others might debate that statement. This is the first case or question. It's a 68-year-old man with a left upper lobe tumor, relatively small, just a little over 2.5 centimeters. But his staging PET scan shows that he has a hot para-aortic station 6 lymph node. He came to me with an FNA biopsy of the tumor that was non-diagnostic, so we didn't have a confirmed diagnosis of cancer. His lung function was tested and felt to be adequate for lobectomy. It wasn't fantastic, but it was felt that he would tolerate a lobectomy. I did a cervical mediastinoscopy since I think we would probably consider this a high-risk patient for having mediastinal node involvement with the PET scan like that. And all his central mediastinal stations, 2R, 2L, 4Rs, 4L7, were all negative. So I'd like to know how you would manage this case next. And you see the five options there, so take your pick. Repeat the needle biopsy, do a Chamberlain biopsy of that hot node at station 6, do a VATS, biopsy the tumor only, or do a VATS, biopsy of the tumor, followed by completion. So it looks like the majority of people are inclined to go with VATS, biopsy the node, and if positive, proceed with lobectomy and node dissection, and some others favoring just the biopsy. And I think those are, in my opinion, the two most reasonable choices. Schaff showed the data from Alec Patterson's review of these lymph nodes at station 5 and 6, and while they're classified as N2, biologically they seem post-resection to behave more as N1 disease with survivals in keeping with the 40%, 50% five-year survival after surgical resection alone. I did option E in this particular patient. Switching topics now to another role of VATS. Pleural effusions. So about 7% of lung cancer patients are going to present with a pleural effusion, all comers. The initial test you might perform in the clinic would be a thoracentesis, or you might send them for an ultrasound-guided thoracentesis in a small effusion. But thoracentesis doesn't have the greatest diagnostic yield. The initial thoracentesis has a sensitivity of 43% and a negative predictive value of only 28% for malignant pleural effusion in a case like I just showed you. And these are in patients with known lung cancer. This is a 78-year-old man. He has a history of COPD and some carotid stenosis. And he had a biopsy done bronchoscopically that showed squamous cell carcinoma in that right upper lobe. The cytology of his initial tap was negative. No distant disease was seen on his metastatic workup, including PET scan. His invasive staging of the mediastinum was negative. What would you do next? Would you refer him for radiotherapy, repeat the thoracentesis, do a VATS pleuroscopy, just go ahead and do a lobectomy, or a thoracotomy and a lobectomy, for those of you who don't do VATS lobectomies? So it's looking like most of you would want to do a pleuroscopy, let's say. Perhaps those of the 13% of you that said VATS lobectomy, it's obvious that you're going to look at the pleura when you begin the case. So maybe that wasn't such a well-designed question. This particular patient, though, again, because we were concerned about various things, including his age and other comorbidities, and that effusion bothered me a bit. I referred him to Kazu, who took him to that interventional suite and did an awake pleuroscopy on him. And he did have these funny little nodules on the pleura that were carcinoma on biopsy. And the fluid that they drained at the same time was again negative, but the biopsy obviously confirmed that he had pleural disease and he was obviously treated differently than lobectomy. Now, what about VATS for occult pleural disease? You might ask, should we be doing VATS on everybody? Anthony Yim from Hong Kong published this prospective study in 1996. He looked at 63 potentially resectable patients, and he did VATS staging on all of them prior to their resections or planned resections. And he found a 3% rate of malignant pleural disease in this particular patient population that we would have presumably called clinical stage 1 or stage 2. I suspect, though, that improved CT imaging today and PET scan will make this number lower. And if we jump ahead to 2003, this multi-center Spanish study did essentially the same thing as what Dr. Yim did. In 105 potentially resectable cases, they did prospective VATS staging, and they only found one patient with malignant pleural disease, so 0.9% rate. So I think, you know, in clinical stage 1 disease, there's limited role for VAT staging if there's no other reason to suspect pleural disease. Next question. A 58-year-old female, she's got a right lower lobe, 3.8 centimeter squamous cell carcinoma. There's no obvious pleural effusion. But the radiologists report this nodule here right next to the internal mammary artery, as well as a number of other nodules within her chest, including interlobar, and there's another one near the inferior pulmonary ligament or the paraesophageal position. And all of these nodules are hot on PET scan. So what would you do with this lady? It's a squamous cell carcinoma in the lung. Would you A, do an EUS to biopsy the station 9 lymph node? Would you do a VATS to biopsy that internal mammary node or nodule? An EBUS TBNA of the mediastinal central nodes? Would you just assume she has stage 4 disease and offer her palliative chemotherapy? Or would you refer to the radiation oncologist to radiate all the visible disease without any further biopsies? Since it's a VATS talk, I think you guys are all in line with me. Yes, I did a VATS on her. I considered doing a needle biopsy of the internal mammary node, but I wanted to know whether she had more widespread disease since she was so young and fit. And our oncologist, we presented her at our multidisciplinary tumor board, and they felt that they would treat her fairly aggressively with radiotherapy as long as she only had very limited disease, particularly since all the hot nodes were kind of within a radiation field. She didn't have any disseminated disease, just that one nodule. Next topic I want to talk about is the evaluation of a clinical T4 tumor. By T4, I'm referring specifically to tumors that invade T4 structures like IVC, subclavian artery, spine, or heart. So Rendina from Rome looked at this in 1997, and they did prospective preoperative VATS evaluation of clinically staged T4 tumors. And they found that VATS was effective in identifying T4 involvement in 50% of cases. In 37% of cases, they downstaged the patient because a T4 structure was not actually invaded by VATS confirmation. And similarly, another study from Spain a few years later had slightly lower results. They confirmed T4 involvement in only 29% of patients. So a lot of these patients you might suspect have invasion of the IVC, like I showed you in a CT scan, but it's not actually invaded, only abutting the IVC or the aorta. And again, 30% of patients were downstaged by doing the VATS procedure. And this could lead you straight on to resection rather than some induction therapy, or rather than saying that the patient is inoperable. So it has the possibility to tremendously change how you're going to manage that patient. We come now to the topic of restaging the mediastinum after induction therapy. And suffice it to say that I've left my opinion on the subject as it's a controversial subject. What is clear is that persistent N2 disease after induction therapy has a worse prognosis, and I think redo mediastinoscopy is difficult. And don't confuse redo staging with redo mediastinoscopy. I think it's quite easy to do a mediastinoscopy after a patient has had an EBUS, but it's another thing to do a mediastinoscopy after the patient's had a good mediastinoscopy. Kasia has shown you whether EBUS may be an option, and she showed the sensitivity, specificity, negative predictive value. And now I will show you what we have on VATS for restaging after induction therapy. There's only one study that I can find in the literature. This is a multicenter phase 2 study. 68 patients were included in the study, and they accrued their patients between 1998 and 2003. They then did VATS after induction therapy, and I'd say the majority of the induction cases were chemotherapy alone. VATS, by their definition of successful, was successful in 69% of the cases. So they were able to sample all the stations that they planned to sample by protocol in only 69% of cases, and they were unsuccessful in 31% of cases, which worked out to a sensitivity of 67% and a negative predictive value of 73%. They concluded that VATS restaging is feasible, but they noted that it was performed poorly or had very limited ability to achieve success if the patient had had radiation as part of their induction therapy or when they were trying to biopsy the 4R position. And in Toronto, our general protocol for neoadjuvant therapy for N2 disease is chemotherapy and radiation. And I think when you look at multiple series of surgically treated N2 disease, the majority of the tumors are on the right side. And therefore, 4R will become a very important position to reevaluate if you want to reevaluate. So overall, I would conclude that VATS doesn't really perform any better than redo med or EBUS, and that they're all sort of relatively equivalent in their performance characteristics for restaging the mediastinum. And I think that as far as safety goes, probably the safest is EBUS. So I'm inclined, if you're going to restage with EBUS. So finally, in conclusion, VATS can be used in multiple ways to stage lung cancer, and it helps to better define the T, N, and M stage of selected patients with lung cancer, where pathologic confirmation or clarifying the invasion of some particular structure may change the way that patient is treated. And with respect to restaging after induction therapy for N2 disease, I think VATS doesn't have any particular role, or at least any superiority to the other modalities that are available, such as EBUS.
Thank you, Dr. Pierre. To learn about the next Toronto Thoracic Refresher, visit torontothoracicrefresher.ca.